And the White House is projecting that the Bush administration will leave the next president a federal budget deficit that's a record. The new estimate for the 2009 deficit is $482 billion. As NPR's John Itzty reports, it's likely to end up even higher.
The new 2009 deficit estimate is larger than the Bush administration projected last February. White House Budget Director Jim Nussle cited two reasons for the negative revision.
The primary reasons that there will be larger deficits in 2008 and 2009 are because of the bipartisan growth package or stimulus checks, as well as slower economic growth.
Slower growth means lower tax revenues. But the 2009 deficit will almost certainly be larger than even the new projection. That's because the administration's budget for fiscal year 2009, which begins October 1st, includes only enough money to prosecute the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan into next spring or early summer, according to Nussle.
We built into the budget for this year $70 billion for 2009. We certainly understand that may not be the full cost of the war. That number is still being developed by the Department of Defense.
Those additional costs could easily push the 2009 budget deficit over the $500 billion level. While it would be a record in dollar terms, the projected deficit would represent just over 3% of the total output of the U.S. economy. That's the measure thought to be most relevant by economists. By that measure, deficits in the 1980s and 90s were much larger. President Bush inherited a budget surplus when he arrived in Washington, but his big tax cuts and the cost of fighting two wars have helped generate budget deficits in every year since. John Itzty, NPR News, Washington.
High gas prices are straining everyone's finances, including the government's. That's because when Americans skimp on gas, they pay less gas taxes, the taxes that finance transportation projects across the country. The Bush administration says the best solution isn't to raise the gas tax, but to get rid of it. NPR's Kathleen Schalk reports.
Americans have responded to record gas prices by driving less, a lot less, for 7 months in a row. The latest figures for May show a 3.7% drop in total miles driven from a year ago. That's the third largest monthly decline ever recorded. At the same time, Americans are switching to more fuel-efficient vehicles. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters says burning less fuel is a good thing.
Fuel has environmental effects that we're not necessarily crazy about, and fuel also impacts our energy security in that we continue dependence and are paying money, if you will, to countries that don't necessarily have our best interest in mind.
But the question is how to keep funding transportation. Slumping gas consumption means less revenue for the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Next year, it's expected to face a $3.1 billion shortfall. The federal government may need to slash transportation spending by a third, delaying some projects, even canceling them. Politicians aren't going to close the gap by raising gas taxes. They didn't want to do that, even when gas was cheap. The Bush administration argues that this isn't the right long-term solution anyway. Again, Transportation Secretary Peters.
I think that it's time to say what we're doing today is not working, will not work into the future, and so then what will?
Today, the Bush administration will reveal its own proposal. It would tap new technology to charge Americans fees based on where, when, and how they travel.
I could just have a device on my car that would record what time of day I was traveling, whether I was traveling by myself, the weight of my vehicle, and I would get a billing every month for the amount of transportation services that I used.
People who use public transit would pay into the system as well. And Peter says the money should also be spent differently.
The way that we allocate today's gas tax dollars is 20% of those dollars go into transit and 80% of them go into highway use.
And while road projects are approved automatically, it's much harder to get federal funds for mass transit. Peter thinks that should change. Many outside analysts agree. Rob Puentes is a fellow at the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program. He says the system was set up decades ago when the whole focus was highways.
The money is given down to the states based on how far people drive, how much people drive, how many roads you have. These are the bases for the funding formulas. So it's an old formula that has no business here in at the dawn of the 21st century.
Puentes says the existing system is counterproductive when it comes to curbing congestion, gasoline consumption, and global warming. Congress could decide to revamp the program, but not until late next year when it takes up the next massive multi-year transportation bill. For now, the government has to figure out how to keep the promises it's already made. President Bush has proposed shifting cash from mass transit to highways. Lawmakers balked, pointing out that record numbers of commuters are now abandoning their cars and crowding onto buses and trains. The House of Representatives voted to siphon $8 billion from the general fund into the Highway Trust Fund. But the Bush administration opposes this, saying it would just add to the federal deficit. Kathleen Chalk, NPR News, Washington.
The government is pushing a new tool to jumpstart the housing market. Officials issued guidelines to promote what's called the covered bond market. It's another way to finance mortgages. Covered bonds are popular in Europe but never took off here. Proponents say if they do, it could reduce some of the reckless lending that led to the foreclosure crisis, as NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
The mortgage market is in such disarray right now that U.S. officials have had to adopt a kind of scattershot approach to fixing it, trying one strategy and then another, hoping something makes a difference. Yesterday, they dusted off a financing tool called covered bonds. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson told a press conference that fixing the U.S. economy requires fixing the housing market.
We're not going to be able to do that unless we have availability of mortgage financing, and it's one source.
Covered bonds are sold by banks to investors. They do this so they can raise money to issue mortgages. But instead of selling the mortgages to third parties like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, the way they so often do now, the banks have to hold them on their balance sheets. That means they have to make sure they have enough capital on hand to guarantee the mortgages. And Karen Shaw Petru, managing partner of Federal Financial Analytics, says they're less likely to do some of the crazy things they did during the mortgage boom, like lending to borrowers with undocumented income or poor credit histories.
Because the bank doesn't wipe its hands clean, their reputation stands behind the mortgage, the risk stands behind it. They're still at risk because of it, so they will take a lot better care ensuring that mortgages aren't high risk or predatory than was the case.
The aim of all this is to keep banks in the business of mortgage lending, but without the excesses of recent years. Covered bonds aren't new, but most investors in the United States have been reluctant to buy them, in part because of questions about their legal status. It was never clear what would happen if the banks that sold the bonds failed. Would bondholders get part of any assets that remained? Or would they go to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the regulatory agency that insures banks? The new guidelines issued by the Treasury Department and the FDIC are supposed to clarify such questions in a way that will reassure investors. But attorney Ken Kohler of the law firm Morrison & Forster says that still may not be enough to overcome investor fears.
The real problem is getting the first investors, to, at least in terms of a U.S. market, to really take a leap of faith that everything's going to work out, particularly knowing what we know now about the state of the mortgage markets.
But Kohler says a lot of big institutional investors may come on board. At yesterday's press conference, executives from Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup showed up to say they were ready to get into the covered bond business. It was an attempt to instill confidence in this new strategy. But U.S. officials also acknowledge that covered bonds are no silver bullet, and there's no guarantee they will have any significant impact on the beleaguered housing industry. It's just one more strategy for turning the market around. And in the current environment, U.S. officials say they have to try anything that shows any promise of making that happen. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Deborah Amos.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama has turned his attention to domestic concerns and a U.S. economy he says is getting worse. Obama met yesterday with an all-star team of economic advisors, including two former members of the Bush administration. NPR's Scott Horsley has this report on what both candidates have been doing.
Barack Obama said at the outset of yesterday's meeting, the U.S. is facing an economic emergency with lost jobs, failing banks, and sky-high prices for food and energy.
And this is an emergency that you feel not only just from reading the Wall Street Journal, but from traveling across Ohio and Michigan, in New Mexico and Nevada, where you meet people day after day who are one foreclosure notice or one illness or one pink slip away from economic disaster.
Obama met for more than 2 hours with his advisors, asking for suggestions on helping struggling families in the short run, as well as tackling longer-term problems like the high cost of health care.
The challenges we're facing could not be more critical. And if we want to meet them, then we can't afford, I believe, to keep on doing the same things that we've been doing.
Obama suggests his Republican rival John McCain would bring more of the same. McCain wants to make President Bush's tax cuts permanent, while Obama has proposed higher taxes on families making more than $250,000, tax cuts for middle-class families, and a big federal investment in roads, bridges, and alternative energy. The people taking part in yesterday's meeting were a who's who of the business and financial world: billionaire investor Warren Buffett, Wall Street banker Jamie Dimon, and the CEOs of Pepsi and Google. Two prominent Bush appointees were also on the guest list: former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill and former SEC Chairman William Donaldson. The high-profile team was probably meant to show the mainstream appeal of Obama's platform, although not everyone at the table has necessarily endorsed the Illinois senator. In a conference call organized by the McCain campaign, former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina dismissed the meeting as a stunt.
The American people are getting treated to yet another photo op by Barack Obama today, but meanwhile, John McCain has been out talking about the economy, understanding the economy, seeking advice on the economy for many, many months.
Ronald Reagan's former economic advisor, Martin Feldstein, warned yesterday that Obama's tax plan would stifle economic growth. But former Democratic Senator Bill Bradley argued similar tax rates during the Clinton years were hardly a handicap. More than 20 million jobs were created in that period, and unemployment fell to historic lows.
I think you only have to contrast the economy of the 1990s with the economy of the last 8 years to see the difference.
McCain himself spent yesterday in California, where he held a pair of fundraisers. He also visited an oil field in Bakersfield, where he renewed his call for more offshore oil drilling.
Now, the briefings that I've had with the oil producers, there are some instances within a matter of months they could be getting additional oil.
That's a much faster timetable than many industry analysts have predicted. McCain also says he supports alternative energy sources, including nuclear, wind, and solar power. The Arizona senator issued a warning about soaking up too much solar energy. McCain has battled skin cancer in the past, and yesterday he had a spot removed from his face at the Mayo Clinic. Speaking to reporters afterwards, he wore a small bandage on his face and a baseball cap for shade.
I want to again urge all Americans to wear sunscreen, particularly this summer. Stay out of the sun as much as possible, wear sunscreen, and if you ever have any slight discoloration, please go to your dermatologist or your doctor and get it checked up on.
A statement issued later by the Mayo Clinic said a biopsy of the discolored area had been ordered as a precaution. The clinic called it a routine minor procedure. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Reno, Nevada.